I welcome each and everyone once again to the Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have
Sukumar Gauru Prabhu Mataji.
Sukumar Gauru Prabhuji. Before handing the Prabhuji, I would like to hand over the call to Mitravinda Mataji to give the brief introduction about Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Hare Krishna, all the world devotees, Dandavat Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much. We would like to give a brief introduction for His Grace Prabhuji. Prabhuji was born in Maharashtra, India in 1980, and Prabhuji was brought up in social background where spirituality was often questioned. Later, Prabhuji developed a natural taste for inquiry into mysteries of God's creation. And Prabhuji has passed College of Engineering Pune from in Mechanical Engineering in 2003. And he came in touch with devotees of International Society for Krishna Consciousness in 2003. And Prabhuji found all his questions answered in the books of Srila Prabhupada. And as a student of MBA Finance, Prabhuji studied Srila Prabhupada books and became a sincere practitioner. Prabhuji also joined NCTEX as assistant manager and worked for 3 years. Later, he took on 2-year Brahmachari training course in Sri Radha Gopinath Temple, Mumbai, and was initiated into Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in 2010. Prabhuji is doing youth preaching department, and Prabhuji was also doing seva of guiding the youth. And Prabhuji always wanted to share his joy with Krishna consciousness with youth. So he gave up his job and decided to help the misguided youth by helping them understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhuji joined ISKCON Chapati as resident in 2009. And later Prabhuji is posted into ISKCON Nasik Temple. Now he's serving as a youth counselor in various colleges of Nasik. And he's conducting seminars on personality development topics in education and corporate sectors. Thank you so much, Mataji. This is a very small introduction for His Grace Sukumar Gaur Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Please accept our humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for giving your very valuable time and association to us. I would like to hand over the call to you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So we will start by Arpanati Mantra. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमल श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित नामे नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिण निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देश तारिण जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे मुखम करोति वाचां अंगुम लंघयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमं वन्दे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणि श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं परमानन्दं हरे कृष्ण सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट नंबर 10 द श्लोक इज एज फॉलो गंधाकृति स्पर्श रस स्व श्रांसी विसर्ग रत्यार्त्य अभिजल्प शिल्पे एकादशम स्वीकरणम ममेति शय्या अहम द्वादशमेक आहु translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sound, touch, form, taste and smell are the objects of the five knowledge acquiring senses. Speech, touch, movement, evacuation and sexual intercourse are the objects of the working senses. Beside this, there is another conception by which one thinks, this is my body, this is my society, this is my family, this is my nation, and so forth. This 11th function of mind is called as the false ego. According to some philosophers, this is the 12th function, and its field of activity is the body. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are different objects for the 11 items. Through the nose, we can smell. By the eyes, we can see. By the ears, we can hear. And in this way, we can gather knowledge. Similarly, there are the karmendriyas, the working senses, the hands, legs, genitals, rectum, mouth, and so forth. When the false ego expands, it makes one thing. This is my body, my family, society, country, etc. Hare Krishna. So we welcome all devotees for this Srimad Bhagavatam class. I am so grateful to all the organizers for allowing me to make a presentation on this Srimad Bhagavatam chapter, Canto 5. This is a very powerful section where we'll be reading the conversation between Jad Bharat and Maharaj Rahugan. In the last chapter, we have seen the sarcastic comments that were made by King Rahugan. He told Maharaj Jad Bharat that you are fatigued, and by carrying the palanquin alone for a long time and distance, you look very fatigued and tired. Then he said, you are old and not very strong and stout. And then he said, you are dead despite the life within your body. Fourth, he said, you do not know that I am your master. And fifth, he said, you are mad. For this disobedience, I shall punish you. And then consequently, we saw that how Jad Bharat Maharaj correspondingly responded by saying that, yeah, I am a spirit soul and the fatigue doesn't relate to the spirit soul, but it relates only to the body. It is the experience that the body goes through. But since I have already crossed the bodily level, I am not able to experience any of these functions. Then he said, you are old and not very strong. And he gives... He gives an explanation where he is saying that yes, this is a bodily designation, and fatness and thinness doesn't belong to the soul, but it belongs to the body. It does not apply to the spirit soul. And then he says that you are dead in spite of the life within you. He said, yes, it's true that everything that is material has a starting and end. Fourth, he said that, don't you know that I am your master? Then Jad Bharat Maharaj speaks that, yes, this master and servant relation is a temporary and it's just conventional. It's not a permanent designation. Just like he remembers his past life and he's saying, you are just a king of a small province, but I was the king of the entire world. And today, see, I'm carrying your palanquin. So it may happen that tomorrow again, I will become a king and then you would be my palanquin carrier. So this designation is a temporary and doesn't pertain to the soul. It pertains only to the body. He says, you are mad and for your disobedience, I shall punish you. And then this is where Rahugan Maharaj says, Jad Bharat Maharaj says, whom will you punish? Will you punish the body or will you punish the soul? I am a self-realized person. What will your punishment do to me? It's of no good use because I have already come to the realization that I am not this body, but I am a spirit soul. So he's pointing out to a very pertinent point where we all have to come to this understanding that just like when a student carries out an experiment in a laboratory, there is already a manual which tells him that you have to reach this conclusion. And if it doesn't reach that conclusion, then his experiment fails. Similarly, for any Jivatma, why are the scriptures given? Because he has to come to a certain realization. And if his realization doesn't match with that which is given in the Shastras, then that is called as the failure of the human form of life. Just like if a student doesn't conduct the experiment properly, he won't be able to reach the required, he won't get the required results, and hence his experiment will prove fail. So in human form of life, we have to come to certain realization, and that is where we can take to the spiritual life very, very seriously. Otherwise, it is very difficult. Now, in this chapter, Jad Bharat Maharaj will instruct King Rahugan based on the next set of questions that he'll be asking. And today's shloka is very, very pertinent, even though the purport given by Srila Prabhupada is very small, but it is very powerful indeed. And we'll take help from another shloka, from another canto, and will relate with this, because this, this shloka is, this chapter is only 17 shlokas, very small chapter. But why is Jad Bharat Maharaj taking so much of effort on helping Rahugan Maharaj understand the reality of life? That is what preaching is all about. You have to spend time and energy to those candidates who are ready to take to spiritual life. And you have to spend time and energy helping them understand their position. You have to come down to their position. At times, you have to chastise them. This is what we see in the first shloka itself. Jad Bharat Maharaj is chastising Rahugan. Rahugan is not an ordinary person. He's the king of an entire province. But still, he's chastising because he wants to make sure that you please understand the concept. The understanding that you have derived till now is not a correct one. Now, how did he understand? Because what questions he posted before Jad Bharat Maharaj, through that he came to understanding. And that is why in the first shloka itself, he's chastising Rahugan Maharaj. He's saying, you're going to the ashram of Kapil Muni to hear a spiritual discourse, and this is what you're talking about. You even don't know about the Atma Dharma and the Deha Dharma, the difference between the body and the soul. So what kind of spiritual advancement you think you have made in your life? You say you are a spiritualist, but then is this what is coming out from you? This is what knowledge you have acquired? See, he chastising in the first shloka itself to Rahugan Maharaj for posing himself as a learned person. He's saying, "A Kovida, you are inexperienced, but you are posing yourself as Kovida Vidwan, as an experienced man." Means the person feels that he knows the truth, but in actuality, what he has considered truth is not the truth. He just makes a show of that, yes, I know this is the reality. Just like I heard one story where a very learned man comes to a village, and he's a very scholarly person, and he challenges the entire village for a debate. He says, anybody who feels himself as a scholar or a person who knows the Shastras, he can come and debate with me. And the entire village is very shocked because there is no person who can match him. But there is a person who says that, okay, I'll debate with him. But he doesn't know anything. And both of them, they're given a big dais, and the entire village is now behind this man who is from their village, and he's made to sit on a dais. He's given a garland. He's given the sandalwood paste and everything. And then the actual scholar, he's sitting just opposite to him, and the entire village is shouting, yes, now there will be a great debate between these two people, and we know that our person will win. And the learned person starts from a very basic question. He asks him, kastvam. Kastvam means, who are you? Now this person, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know any Sanskrit. And this person is expecting some answer. And the entire village is looking to the person whom they have made to sit on a Vyasasana. And then this person, who doesn't know anything, he just so boldly and so strongly says, kastvam, kastvam, dastvam, pastvam. And the entire village starts clapping, and they said, yes, what an answer. This is the great answer. And the person who is a real scholar, he just keeps watching at him, and he comes to understanding that this guy doesn't know anything. And he feels that it's waste, useless waste of time. So he just picks up his bag and he leaves. And to the amazement, the entire village comes to a conclusion that this person has lost. and our person has won. But the point was, this person didn't know anything, and the learned person came to that understanding that he doesn't know anything, but he's just posing. Similarly, in Bhaja Govindam, 23rd shloka, it is said that, very, very wonderful, but simple, but very powerful and wonderful shloka. Kastvam koham kut ayat, kome janani kome tat. Iti paribhavaya sarva saram, vishvam tyakva sapna vichar. He's saying, kastvam, you inquire about this question. Kastvam, who are you? Koham, who am I? Kut ayat, from where have I come? Kome janani, who is my real mother? Kome tat, who is my real father? Iti paribhavaya sarvasaram, this is the inquiry that you should make. Vishwa tyaktva swapna vicharam. And you should understand that this material life is nothing but just like a dream for the pure spirit soul. So material world is presented as a place of experience, world of experience. That is why the terminology of dream is given in the previous chapter. In dream, there are so many imaginative things that come then. And in that dream, you experience pain and pleasure. When something good comes, you experience pleasure. When something horrible comes, you experience pain. And then you go through the whole cycle of suffering and joy. And when you wake up, you understand it was just a dream. So the entire gamut of dream is nothing but an experience. Similarly, the material life, the material pain, the material pleasure is nothing but an experience for the pure spirit soul. He has to go through that experience. But the point is, we don't have the real knowledge and we pose that we know everything. Just like today morning, what happened, one of our students, he called me and he chants rounds and he's well connected to the temple. So he called me in a great hurry and he was very tense. He said, Prabhuji, I need to talk urgently with you. I said, okay, give me some time. I'll just call you back. I called him back. And then he said, Prabhuji, I want to speak something very urgent to you. I said, yes, go ahead. What help do you need from me? And then he said, I have my real sister. She is in 11th standard year. And from past 2-3 days, she is having dreams that she is going to die on 10th of September. And she is so fearful. She is so fearful that she has stopped eating from last 2-3 days. And then there was a lot of conversation that was happening. But the point is, she took the dream so seriously that she has given up eating. It is a possibility that she may die or she may not die, but she'll surely die if she starts fasting from now. By 10th of September, she'll be surely dead. Then we showed her horoscope to some of our senior devotees here who are into astrology. They said nothing like that. It's mostly her. She has taken the dream very seriously and hence she has lost her equilibrium. And that is why she's behaving like this. She needs some counseling and things will be all right. So the point we are making is, experiences are taken so seriously, and that is why there is so much of suffering. That is what is pointed on shloka number 3. The insufficient understanding of the highest truth. Here Rahugan Maharaj is not even well versed with the basic truth of Atma Dharma and Deha Dharma. I am not this body but a pure spirit soul. So what to speak of the loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord? And that is what is exactly happening. The source of knowledge is very crucial, very important. In modern world, the propaganda of knowledge is done by the so-called intellectuals. Now, if you see the current situation of Afghanistan, you know, people are questioning how come this can happen? The terrorists can take over the entire nation. And why? Where is God? And what is God doing? Come on, it's not the question of God. Every time you don't have to blame God that where is God and what is he doing? He's not some ordinary guy coming to help you every now and then for your petty fights here. Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto makes it very, very clear in the starting itself of the 7th canto. Parikshit Maharaj is asking this question that the Lord seems partial to the demigods and impartial he is not favoring the demons. Is it so? Is it the nature of the Lord that if somebody glorifies him, then he goes and helps and he kills the demon? Then Shukdev Goswami is saying, no, it's not like that. The population of the world is indicative of the presence of the strongest mode at that time. And these modes are favored by the energy of the Lord called as time. So right now, time is favoring mode of passion and mode of ignorance. And hence, you find a population of that category growing at a very fast pace. That's the only reason. There is nothing else in that. Where is God and why is God doing? No, it's time is favoring them. Just like if you see in the 8th canto, Devasura Sangram, Lord, when Mata Aditi went to Lord, is praying to Lord Vishnu, please help my kids. She, Lord is saying, time is not in their favor. Indra goes to Lord, says, please help. He says, time is not in your favor. Time is now favoring the mode of passion and ignorance. And hence the demons are powerful. You will have to wait till the time changes. It's as simple as that. The time is now favoring mode of passion and mode of ignorance, and hence that kind of population is seen all over the globe. But what the intellectuals, they so-called intellectuals, they promote some different set of knowledge, and hence people come to a very different conclusion. And that is why hearing from sources like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita is so crucial at this point of time. Just like if we take the current situation of Afghanistan. So some of the intellectuals immediately as Taliban took over, then they started raising questions. Now, will Taliban attack India? Now, if you see the geographical positioning of Afghanistan and India, there is an entire nation called as Pakistan between Afghanistan and India. So even if Afghanistan has to attack India, there is Pakistan in between. And right now, their internal crises are so heavy that there is no question of they coming here and fighting. And on the contrary, the Indian army has already posted itself in so many places that Afghanistan will dare not. But the intellectuals are promoting this will happen and that will happen and India will have to do this and India will have to spend so much of money, this and that. Why? Because the intellectuals are promoting in a certain way. The situation is predicted in a very different way. That is the power of mind. And this is the point that from this shloka, the last point that Prabhupada makes about false ego, we'll just deal with that one point, false ego. How the mind and false ego conveys the entire situation in a different way. That's the power of false ego. Just understand what this false ego can do. Now, the media is propagating in something in a very different way. Okay. Now, the same question was asked to the president of Uzbekistan, Mr. Karimov. He said, "What are you not afraid that Taliban will attack Uzbekistan because you both share the borders and the area which already Taliban had conquered is very close to Uzbekistan border." So he said, "Are you not afraid that Taliban will attack you?" He gave a very wonderful reply. He said, "Yes, there are a lot of sources that can cause terrorism in our country. But the land of my country is not favorable for terrorism." So the reporter was shocked. "What do you mean it's not favorable for terrorism?" He said that I don't have too many intellectuals in my country. Because these are the intelligence, those who spread around ignorance. Ignorance means what? Not allowing the general masses to understand the truth from the right sources. And that is what definition Prabhupada gives in the first shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. Giving the right knowledge for the upliftment of the general masses, which is favoring the general masses, that is called as knowledge. I'm paraphrasing it, not exact terms, but this is what Prabhupada gives. It has to be right from the right source and should favor the general masses. That is knowledge. And apart from that, rest everything is ignorance. And the shloka 3 is mentioning that Vedas are not sufficient for understanding the higher truth. Why? Because they are meant for highly evolved people and highly evolved people have to decode it and then they have to come to the understanding that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead and serving Krishna is the only goal of life. Now, if we see the first canto itself, Vedvyas himself is desponding while writing the Veda, after writing the Vedas. He is feeling incomplete and dissatisfied. Why? Because he has not brought Krishna Bhakti to the forefront. He has used Krishna Bhakti as a tool to gain dharma, artha, kama and moksha. It's just a tool. You use it and you gain it and you leave Krishna Bhakti. That is not the goal of the Shastra. And that is why he was feeling dissatisfied. Means even Vyasa's understanding was incomplete before he met his guru. And when he met his guru, he got corrected. He got the knowledge from the right source, and that is how he came to the right conclusion. So now, the point is, what causes this entanglement for this jiva in the samsara? Samsara is a samyak sar, but there is no sar, asar. There is all asar in this samsara. There is only one sar. That is the holy name of the Lord. It is the most purest thing. And second is the time factor. If you do any yajna, what is the guarantee that you will be having all the items that are pure? Nothing. There are only two things in this world that are pure. That is time, which is Krishna himself, and the holy name of Krishna, that is Krishna himself. And this is exactly what the definition of Yajna Srila Prabhupada has given us in the morning. We chant. Why? Because that is the yajna where we are investing our given time for the best of the purpose, and we are giving the ahuti of the best of the possible commodity that we have in this human form of life, that is the name of Krishna. That is the super intelligence of Prabhupada. Prabhupada, don't go anywhere, just chant 16 rounds early hours of the morning, give 2 quality hours for chanting, that is sufficient. Of course, sufficient means that will help you grow in your spiritual life. So, 4 shlokas is very clear that mind, with the help of the senses, expands the existence of the jiva. Example, just like a man, a person who is a bachelor, takes on a woman as his wife and then he expands his existence. Vistarita iti stri, that is the definition of a woman. She expands the field of activities for a person. Similarly, the mind, taking the help of the senses, will expand the entire gamut of activities for the jiva. Example, there's a person. He's a single person. So his mind will think of limited things. One set of, few set of clothes, few items, few things here and there. As soon as he takes on a wife, things will start expanding. There will be wife, then kids, then house, then household paraphernalia, then social activities, then so many relatives and so many programs and functions. Automatically, things are expanding. Why? Because mind, taking the senses along, expand it. I'll give you one more example too. This concept is very important. Please understand it. How mind takes on the senses and expands things. If you understand this concept, most of our problems will be solved. Just like I'll give a small example. How mind expands. Mind is by nature expansive. Mind is by nature expansive. Please understand this concept. Now, how is mind expansive? Suppose there is a family. Husband and wife. Okay, or any person, any individual. Suppose if there is a mother in the house and her daughter tells her that I'm going for a party and I'll be back by 11 p.m. in the night. Now this is okay, go. She goes with her friends, and while she's back on her way, immediately after some time, the mother gets a call that, is this so-and-so named person your daughter? She says, yes. Who is this? This is the police speaking. Your daughter's car has been damaged badly and she's hospitalized, and now she has to be treated as urgent as possible. Now, when the mother hears this, what happens to her mind? Her mind immediately starts reacting to what she has heard. Why? Because her mind has already entered into the field of activity of her own daughter. Anything happening there to that child is directly, proportionately affecting the mother. Something happens to the husband, immediate reaction is given by the mind because the mind has expanded into the husband. Anything happens to the son, it immediately shows a reaction because it is expanded into the son. If any household paraphernalia, if your car or if any gadget is damaged, your mind has expanded into that gadget. And hence you feel the pain. That is called as the expansive nature of the mind. Mind has expanded itself into so many things and into so many designations. And that is why Bhishma is saying, wind it up, wind it up, wind it up. It's time to give up, give up, give up that designation. Because till the time you give up the designation, you'll not be able to peacefully give up this body. Because your mind has become so expansive. I am a manager, I am a housewife, I am a husband, I am this, I am that. It has expanded into so many things. Withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. That is why the power, mind has the power to expand and the mind has the power to withdraw. Let's take the example of Bharat Maharaj from the previous chapters itself. Bharat Maharaj, in the peak of his devotion, his mind expanded, his mind entered into that deer. And not only that, the mistake that he did, he started spending more time with the deer. And the more time you spend with any object, any person, the mind will expand more into that person. It is so simple. The more time you spend with a person or an object, your mind will get, will expand more into that object and that person, and it goes deeper and deeper. And when that object or that person leaves you, it leaves you in nothing but only pain. And that is why today, in today's world, there is something called as emotional intelligence, EI. This is an upcoming concept and it has been accepted widely across the world, because even in the corporates, forget about personal life, even in the corporate, this concept is highly used. I'll just explain emotional intelligence in one simple example. Suppose if there is a center here and we draw concentric circles around that point. One point, concentric circles around that point, okay? Point is we ourselves. The very first circle, then there is the second circle, then there is a third circle, and so many other circles. Center is we all. Whomever you place in the very first circle are the people whom you love. Mother, father, spouse, kids. If anything happens to this people, it is having a direct proportion of influence to your emotions. Then if there is some other relative who is close to you, if you place him in the second, then it will be directly, it will affect you, but not as much as it is affecting you when the people whom you have placed in the first circle are affected. So the first thing that is taught in emotional intelligence is place the people properly. Place the people in the proper circle. If you are not placing, it is directly going to destroy you emotionally. Please understand this concept. This is what Bharat Maharaj did. He had placed Krishna first in the first circle. He left his father, he left his mother, he left his wife, he left every damn thing for Krishna. Krishna was the most closest. Krishna, something happens, he was directly affected. But then same thing, he placed near to Krishna was the deer. And gradually as he started spending time with that deer, his emotions were directly getting affected. And that is how he got diverted from his Krishna consciousness, emotional intelligence, placing the object in the right circle of influence. The closer you keep the person to the center, that is you, it will directly have effect on your emotions in terms of pain or pleasure. Take another example, Mata Sita. Dear, again dear, and Sri Ram. For some time, she placed the deer in the nearest circle. And she was just looking at the deer and she felt affected by the deer. And she said, I want the deer. And rest is the history. We all know what happened. She had to lose Ram. She had to lose the association of Ram. So the mind has the unique ability. This is given in the fifth shloka. The mind has the unique fifth. The fifth, sixth shloka will give you the characteristics. And I'll just give you some examples. And one of that is this. There's eight characteristics of the mind in the fifth and the sixth shloka. Is samsmriti chakra kuta. Means the mind has the power to deceive the jiva. This is a very powerful phenomenon, and that will happen only when the mind is boosted by the false ego, which is now given in the 10th shloka. Okay, now I'll give you two small stories. What power this false ego and this mind combined together has to deceive the jiva. Okay, two stories, real life stories I'll give you. Look at the power of the false ego and the mind to deceive the living entity. This is a real story. The entire world knows this. This is 2008, India, Mumbai, Taj attack. Okay. There were few terrorists who entered the Mumbai CST railway station, and they started firing all of a sudden, and there was a huge chaos. And later on, they went from spot to spot, exploding bombs and killing people and shooting out haphazard, and then they entered the one of the famous hotels, the old Taj Hotel near the Gateway of India, and the entire episode, around about 300 people were injured and 177 people were killed on spot. Okay, ultimately there was one policeman, rest of the four of the five militants, four were killed. One was successful in running away, but the police chased him, and somehow his car dashed. As his car dashed, he had to stop. And who will take, because he had machine gun? There was one Mr. Hongle. He was a sipai in the police force. He said, "Sir, I'll go." He didn't think about what will happen. He said, facing him means right death. So this Mr. Hongle, he opened the door. As he opened the door, sure enough, this terrorist directly blank point. Blank point means here is the body and here is the gun. That's it. That's called blank point. He shot the machine gun round after round into the body of this. But the entire time, this policeman, Mr. Hongle, he didn't allow the machine gun to move so that those who are behind him can catch him from the other door. Eventually, he died on the spot because so many bullets were shot. Okay. Now, the police captures this last terrorist. They take him into the court. And now, since he is an international terrorist, and in an international court, you have to have a lawyer who has to speak on behalf of the terrorist or whoever the person is. We can't, because he doesn't know the regional language, so you have to give him a lawyer. So there was a Muslim lawyer lady who was given to him, and there was a government lawyer that was given, who was fighting the case against this terrorist. So his name was Advocate Ujwal Nikam. So what happened was, Ujwal Nikam had to interrogate with this terrorist. So the date that was fixed was on the day of Balram Jayanti, that is Raksha Bandhan, Rakhi Purnima. So before visiting this terrorist in the jail, Mr. Ujwal Nikam, he went to his sister's place. He took her blessings and he had tied all Rakhis, and then he came to the jail. He visited this terrorist, and there was a huge whole day session with him, and everything was recorded live. Now, there is the interrogation that is happening between Mr. Ujwal Nikam, the advocate, and this terrorist. And the terrorist is asking, "What are you tying on your hand?" And then this Mr. Ujwal Nikam, he gives him an answer that it's an Hindu ritual. We celebrate this in honor of our sisters, and we assure them of protection from all odds in life. So that is why we celebrate, just like Draupadi did to Lord Krishna, and that is how we do this year. And as soon as he heard the entire episode of Krishna and how Draupadi died, so tears started coming from his eyes. Okay. And the cameras caught this. Tears coming out from the eyes of a terrorist. Immediately, the news went viral across the globe. This terrorist is now feeling guilty of his act. And you can see the tears that are falling from his eyes. Please see in what a miserable condition he is. What do you think? Should he be pardoned or should he be punished? Such a person, what is your opinion? Please comment in the comment box below. We would like to know your opinion. It's gone viral across the globe. There is celebration in the nearby countries for the foolishness which the media had shown. Okay. Now, this advocate, Mr. Ujjwal Nikam, has no idea what has happened. The whole day he's interrogating and thinks, and at the end of the day, he's very tired. He comes out, and as soon as he comes out, the entire media is now focused on this Mr. Advocate Ujjwal Nikam. And then the entire media is asking, what do you think? Should we release him? He's crying. He's crying. He's feeling guilty about the crime that he has done. And immediately, he was very sharp gentleman. He understood what the media has done by now. And people, can you imagine the entire, so many communities were feeling, oh, so sad. Oh, he had to do it. He was told to do it. And this and that. And then Mr. Ujjwal Nikam, he said, yeah, but I have one more thing. While I was coming out and in our last sitting, he said, sir, I am of so and so community. And I like to have non-veg dinner every day. So it is my request that it would be nice if your government can provide me non-vegetarian meal every day. This is what he said. And as soon as the media heard this, oh, how can he say like this? He is a criminal. And how can he behave like this? He is to be punished. And how he can make so much of exact shift in the entire theme of what they were propagating within a fraction of seconds. Some few moments, they were not even ready to think that 177 people were killed, 300 injured. So many policemen had to give up their lives. Nothing was thought. Release. That is the power of the mind when things are given to us by these intellectuals. This is how they can deceive the mind of the jiva. Within moments, it changes. Can you imagine? Within moments, it can change the perception. That is the power of the mind based on the false ego and the three modes. Second story. This is also a real story. There was a famous picture by a famous photographer. He became famous because of this picture. He got awards for this picture. So one of the famous channels told him that why don't you go and shoot some good pictures from real life pictures from some different parts of the countries. So he came to Africa, and in Africa, we know it's a nation which is struggling with so much of terrorism and so many other things. So this person, he comes to Africa, and then he's searching from different places to places. And there is one picture that there is one place where he finds that is a very poor girl. She's like only skin and bones. And she's searching for some food on the ground that is left over. And she is so weak that she can give up her body anytime. And there is a vulture behind her, few feet behind her, waiting for that baby girl, not baby girl, a small girl to die. She's so weak. Even the vulture can understand that she will leave the body anytime. And this is the picture that he shot. There were some other pictures also that he shot, but this was the best picture that got awards and a lot of money for him. And his name was Kevin Carter. So Kevin Carter became famous and he's a lot of money, and recognition for him. So this is the poverty that you can see in Africa, and what is the world doing about it, and this and that. And Kevin Carter is a big photographer now. All done, all good. One person one day calls Kevin Carter and he says, my lord Kevin Carter, I have been searching for your number for such a long time, and I was desperately waiting to talk to you. And Kim Carter said, yes, well, let me know how can help you. He said, is it really that you shot the picture? He said, yes, I was there in that condition and I have shot that picture. My goodness, what did you do then after seeing that picture? He said, I just shot so many pictures and I was so busy whole day. I shot it and I left and came back to my country. He said, is that all you did? You shot pictures and you came back. Kim Carter said, yes. Then that person asked him, Mr. Kevin Carter, can you let us know how many vultures were there in that picture? Kevin Carter said, you must have seen there was only one vulture. The person said, no, I saw two vultures. How can you say one? Kevin Carter said, see, man, I was there. I was shooting the pictures. I know how many people were there. The person said, no, there were two vultures. The one who was waiting for the child to die, and second was waiting to earn money. So there were not one vulture, but two vultures in the painting, in the picture. One was the real eagle and the other was you, Kevin Carter. Kevin Carter hears this. And when he hears the reality that so much of money that I had got, I could have used it for some good social cause, he felt so sad. He felt so sad. His mind went, took him into depression. The person who was so happy and enjoying his life, suddenly the entire thing changed. His mind is based on his false ego, felt so bad that Kevin Carter committed suicide under depression. This is called as Samsmriti Chakra Kutha from the 5th and the 6th sloka. How mind deceives this. It can perceive bad as good and it can perceive good as bad. And this is what in the modern psychology is called as Stockholm Syndrome. What is Stockholm Syndrome? Condition in which hostages develop a psychological bond with the captor during the captivity. Such strong emotional bond is formed during the intimate time that is spent with the captors. Can you imagine this? That is the power of the mind. That is what happened with this terrorist in India. The media propagated in such a way, mind perceived it in this way that, you know, you can release him. Forget 170 people dying, what is the big thing? Same thing happened August 23, 1973, Jan Erik Olsen. He was a person who attempted to rob a bank in Sweden. There were four people who were working in that bank. He took four people in hostage and kept them under captive for 6 days. Now, do you know what happens after 6 days of this four captives staying with this person who is attempting to rob the bank? When they released him, the people were not ready to speak against this Jan Erik Olsen. Why? Because Jan Erik Olsen treated us so nicely. He was so kind to us. He didn't harm us. He displayed such positive feelings towards us. We are not concerned with the loss of money that people who have earned them with their hard work. If they lose it, we don't care for it. He was good to us. He spent good time with us. This is how the mind makes us perceive things. This is the power of false ego. Correct becomes incorrect. Incorrect becomes correct. They forgot that the hard-earned money of others would be lost. Mind is self-absorbed. My pleasure, my pain. That's it. I don't want to understand anybody else. He was good to me. It's nice. So the fifth and the sixth shloka speak about the same qualities of the mind. Nine qualities have been spoken. Vasanatma, it is filled with pious and simple impressions. You cannot see beyond that impressions what good and bad the mind will bring if you do that certain action. Vishaya upakrito, attached to sense enjoyment. My, I, me, me. Guna pravaha, it is carried under the sway of the three modes. Vikrita, it is trans. There can be transformation that can happen in the mind. Shodasha atma, it is the chief among the 16 elements. Vibrata pritak namabhi rupa bhedam, it causes different types of bodies. Maya rachitam tar atma, covering of the jiva is made up of maya. Samsmritir chakra kuta, it deceives the jiva. And dukkha sukha vyaktikaram, it creates unavoidable distress and happiness. Just like the girl we saw, unavoidable. She is feeling, this is the reality, I am going to die, I can't do anything. So the conclusion is given in the seventh shloka that the mind is the cause of repeated birth and death. Now how can the mind be the cause of bondage also and liberation also? Two opposite, exact opposite things. How can the mind cause this two opposite phenomenon? One thing causing two different phenomena. If your AC can cool also and make things hot also, so why can't this function be available in the mind? Eighth shloka is speaking of the same thing. If there is a nut and if there is a bolt, if you move the bolt in a certain direction, the nut will get tighter. If you move it in a different direction, it will become looser. Similarly, if the mind is absorbed in matter, it is bondage. If it is absorbed in Krishna, it is liberation. If the mind is attached to the association of materialism, it is bondage. If it is attached to the sadhus, it is detachment. Bondage and detachment is our choice. We choose bondage and liberation. So don't blame Krishna. Don't blame Maya. Maya is nothing but the display of the three modes of material nature. We have to choose in which mode we have to function. And that is why the jiva is held responsible. Even all activities are carried by the three modes, but the jiva decides in which mode to stay. That is why he is held responsible. And then the modes act and then he will act accordingly. So bondage or liberation is our choice. We have to choose what we want. Don't every time go and blame Krishna. This is happening, that is happening. No, it is we who are responsible. But then the question comes, then even after so much of practice, why can't we give up our old habits and practices? Because we are experiencing some enjoyment out of it. That has become our tendency. Just like if you have tendency of becoming angry on small things, what does anger show? There is a tendency of controlling mindset. Why is he not behaving like this? He should behave like this. And since he is not behaving like this, I am feeling angry. Means what? You get pleasure in controlling. That's the only thing. You should listen to me. My kids should listen to me. My husband should listen to me. My wife should listen to me. The temple president should listen to me. Everybody, how can everybody listen to me? And that is what is exactly pointed out in this 10th shloka, that the false ego works twofold, identification and possessiveness. Identification means I am so great. Possessiveness, this is mine. Twofold working. This is also a real story from the, it happened in India, 1920s. There was this king of Rajasthan, Alwar district, a very wonderful person of his time. So he visited London once and in 1920s. See the power of false ego. He visited London in 1920s and he was there in Mayfair area. And there he saw a big showroom of Rolls Royce. And he entered that showroom because he liked the car very much. So he said, let's purchase the car. I'll ship it from London to India. So he went inside, but seeing his attire, the salesman didn't recognize that he was an important person. So he didn't pay so much of attention and eventually the king felt neglected. He came back to India and it was a tradition at that time that whenever the king used to book, they used to book 3 or 4 cars at the same time. So this king booked 3 Rolls Royce at the same time. Now, if you have to buy a Rolls Royce, you just can't have only money. Rolls Royce is not given to people who have only money. It is given to reputed people. So they check your credentials. And then he sent all his credentials that I am the king of such and such province and I have a lot of money and this is my palace and this is the wealth that I possess. And immediately it was sanctioned. 3 Rolls Royce were given to him. But his ego didn't allow him to sit silently. He wanted that revenge from the Rolls Royce company. So what did he do? So in that burning passion, he took the Rolls Royce and behind that Rolls Royce, he attached a trailer. And what was that trailer meant for? That trailer was meant to collect garbage from each and every colony. 3 Rolls Royce carrying a trailer, which is exclusively meant to collect the garbage of this Alwar district. And there was photos in all the newspaper and the news reached Rolls Royce company. And when the company came to know that this is what has happened, the company personally begged for forgiveness from this king. So please don't do this because it is spoiling our company name. We give you in return that we are sorry for our behavior that we have shown towards you. Kindly, please don't do this kind of thing. And then he trashed all the 3 cars. He stopped using it for garbage, but he trashed all the 3 cars. That is where your ego can take us. Ego is the only factor that drives every action. Why did this king do such activity? Because it is the ego said, you have to do it till that I cannot be satisfied. So why is Jada Bharat Maharaj speaking this in great detail? Because he himself was cheated by his own mind. His false ego forced him to show false compassion on the deer and that forced him to take one more birth. So in this life, he was very well aware of the sharpness of the sense object. He had the deepest of the realization that this sense object, any damn sense object which is made up of these 3 modes has the power to trap us because the mind is the object behind all this attraction. So till that time, we are not convinced about the sharpness of this object. 6.5.41, Daksha speaks to Narad Muni. He says, Nanu Bhuyana Janati Puman Vishaya Tikshnata. He is saying, Narad Muni, you have made my sons into sadhus, but Baba, they have no anubhuya, they have no experience. Na Janati, they don't know what? Puman Vishaya Tikshnata. They don't know the sharpness of the sense objects. Because Prabhupada has used this word sharpness with such great intelligence, shocked, you will be amazed to understand what Prabhupada has chosen the words. Powerful choice of words, Prabhupada. Nirvidyate swayam tasmat. When he goes through the experience that yes, this sense object cut us, they harm us, then nirvidyate, he will become aloof. Swayam tasmat, by himself. On the contrary, what you are doing, you are forcing. But not by changing their intelligence forcefully. Pare means by others. This will not happen. So let my children experience this. Daksha's method is let them go through the experience. Then they will understand, oh my God, sense objects are so dangerous that we don't have to enter that and we have to keep ourselves protected. Bharat Maharaj had to learn through experience. Mata Sati, she was so attached to her family that she had to go through the entire experience to learn and come to conclusion, my God, it's useless to be attached to the family. Mata Sita had to personally learn through an example. She had to lose Lord Ram. Indra had to learn. What did he do? Just neglected his guru. He didn't speak a word. He didn't say anything. He just neglected. Neither did his guru curse him. There was no curse given by his guru. But what was the effect? He was so attached. He was so possessive about his position. He neglected his guru. He lost everything. That was the sharpness that he had to face. So there are two things. Prabhupada gives an example. By others' mind, it change and then we think not to do. But what happens if in future the if we get attracted to that sense object? Prabhupada gives the example of a pregnant lady. When she goes through the pain, labor pain, then she says that I will not become pregnant anytime again. But again, next time she comes and she again becomes pregnant. So what is our condition? Are we in the category by one experience we are going to give up the attraction to the sense enjoyment, or are we in the category of the pregnant lady who keeps coming again and again? Sharpness. It is how quickly we realize the sharpness. Sharpness means what? It has the ability to hurt us. Sharp means very quick. There is very quick attraction the sense object can create in our mind. Just like Agnidra Maharaj is doing tapasya, and just he hears something and there is Purochitti, and within a flick of second is attracted and the entire scene changed. Tapasya stopped. What is sharpness? There is sudden change in the direction. Jadbharat Maharaj going for tapasya and suddenly his entire direction is changing. Parikshit Maharaj goes for hunting, the entire direction changes. There is sudden, sharp. That is sharp. Sudden. It affects the senses at such a fast pace, we can't even figure out what happened. It's only when we are stuck up in this situation, we come to understanding that is the fastness, the pace at which mind and ego are working. So we have to slow them down. And for that slowing of down, this is the one method, understanding the sharpness of the sense object. But the point is, it's not always that we are convinced about it. Sometimes we may feel, this may not happen to me. Last time it may have happened, but this may not happen to me. And then we commit the same action. Action of the mind happens so quick that we are not able to take a proper call. So then what is the solution? The example is given of Avanti Brahman. He saw, he became experienced, he became detached completely. How? He took control of his mind and senses. That is what we see when he says, Nayam jano me sukha dukkha heto na devatatma graha karma kala. Manam param karanam amananti samsara chakram parivartayetat. He's saying, Nayam janome. Nobody is responsible for my happiness and distress. Na deva, na tatma, na graha, na karma, na kala, manam param. This mind, rascal mind, is the only cause of my happiness and distress. Samsara chakram, and this is forcing me to enter the cycle of birth and death again and again. So now then, what is the solution? Two solutions are given in the 11th canto. Krishna gives this to Uttava. This comes in the Aila Gita by Pururava. Adrishtva ashrutatma bhavan na bhava upajahit. You have to be very, very choosy about what you see and what you hear. Because what you see and what you hear directly affects your mind. And this is what exactly happened with Mata Sati. She was sitting nicely in her home happily with her husband, and immediately she sees that there are so many devatas going in their plane. And what is the discussion? Do you know at Sati's father's place there is such a big yagya and it will be such a great fun and we are going to enjoy and everybody is so beautiful looking and there are so many ornaments and so much of jewelry and we'll be doing this and we'll be rocking there and we'll be dancing there and this and that. And she sees them so beautifully decorated and she hears from them. She says, I have to go. I must go. For that, she is ready to fight with her own husband and she leaves the place in great anger. So first thing, Krishna is saying, Adrishtva ashrutatma bhavan. Be very cautious about what you see and what you hear. And second solution, 11.26.26, Tato dussanga utrijja satatsu sajjate buddhiman tatameva asya chindanti mono vyasanga uktidhi. He is saying then the second thing is mano vyasanga, excessive attachment of the mind. Vyasanga is excessive attachment of the mind. Ukti bhi chindanti, by their words of the buddhiman, this attachment will be chindanti, will be directly pierced and directly cut. That is why Krishna says in the first, Shukdev Goswami says in the first canto, Jnana Vairagya Yatyasu. Jnana and Vairagya will be automatically produced. You don't have to do anything. If you are properly hearing from the devotees, the authorized sources, not from the unauthorized intellectuals. Otherwise, they will spoil the entire direction. So Jnana and Vairagya is the award. Krishna will award us Vairagya. That is the award that is given by Krishna. It is not by our strength that we become Vairagi. No, none of the Ashtanga Yogis, Gyan Yogis, Karma Yogi, none of them can become detached from this material world till Krishna gives it. For them, the process is different. For us, the process is to hear repeatedly about Krishna. And this is how we will be able to overcome the false ego. What has been spoken in the 10th shloka, that too in the association of devotees. Because association of devotees purifies the ego. And the Shabda Brahma purifies the mind. And Shastras purifies the intelligence. Okay? Thank you all so much for your kind and patient hearing. If I've spoken beyond my realization, kindly excuse me. Kindly forgive me for any inappropriate words or example that I may have given. But whatever I have understood and whatever I've heard from my seniors, I've just repeated it. So please keep me in your prayers. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful, wonderful class explaining about the false ego, mind power and everything with beautiful examples and life stories. So do you have some time for the questions, Prabhuji?
Yes, yes, we have some time.
Anuradha Mataji, you can please go ahead with your question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances, Prabhu. Prabhu, what a heavy class, Prabhu, though it was so wonderful, but very heavy to digest too many things. I have few like a chain like questions, so how much ever time you have, please stop me when you need to go.
You ask one question so that I can understand,
yes,
and
yes,
I can answer.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, Prabhu. So yes. The first thing that you said, that you know, so many things we need to withdraw, right? You said so many designations.
Right.
So it is in a way, you did not use the word exactly attachment, but to me it was sounding like attachment. Did I get it correct, Prabhu?
Yes,
when you said
yes. Attachment to various things. Yeah.
And did you say Bhishma Dev said withdraw?
He says you withdraw your mind from the various designations that are created by the false ego. So you have to withdraw your mind.
So how do we withdraw as a devotee, Prabhu, I'm asking?
Withdrawal process, actually, it's the simple example I would give. I will report Srila Prabhupada in saying that one devotee, he told him that this is the bank of our country, which is very, very rich. So it's just like saying that the money of that bank belongs to me. What is here that belongs to me? The nothing that belongs to you. Just like if you keep a child in a babysitting and you pay the babysitting, whatever dollars or money that you pay. And at the end of the day, what do? You pay to the babysitting and get back your child. Similarly, everything is given to us here by Krishna. And what is the payment Krishna does gives us? It is the joy of staying together as a family. That is the payment that Krishna gives us. But at the end of the day, Krishna will say, 8 hours are over. This was the quota of money or this was the reward that you were supposed to get. I gave you that reward. Now give my child back. So the having a clear understanding that nothing belongs to me is the starting of the withdrawal process. Everything belongs to Krishna and Krishna has kept all things under my care and protection. So that is how you start withdrawing. Seeing everything, every smallest of the thing in connection to Krishna. That is called as withdrawal.
So Prabhu, practically speaking, it is, I mean, we all understand it after hearing it. So it is more on a theoretical basis than practical, but do we?
No, not theoretical. See, that is what that is how I ended my class with. See, you want to give up that sense. We all want to give up that sense of proprietorship. But then are we asking Krishna for that sense of renunciation? Krishna will only reward us with renunciation when we repeatedly ask Krishna. I'll give you a real life example. There was one lady devotee here in Satara, Maharashtra. Very sincere soul. But she heard one lady saint here in Maharashtra. But that lady saint was from a background where her mother was a prostitute. So her mother eventually wanted her to take up her profession. But she said, no, my life is only for Lord Vittal and I don't want any person to touch me. So she was so inspired by the story that she told Lord Krishna that I don't want to be with any other person other than you. She was so intense. And what happened was she was praying for that. I don't want. And one day what happened was she was going with her uncle on a bike. And you know Indian roads, how they are. And suddenly what happened? That bike entered that pothole and the bike slipped. And bike slipped and her uncle was able to save himself. But this girl, who was sitting behind, she fell. And nothing happened to her. Absolutely nothing happened to her. But when her uncle went to pick her up, she had already left her body. Why? Because her parents had already planned her marriage at a place where she was of the mindset that I don't want to serve anybody else other than you. If you force me, it is better you take me back. So if we want to get detached from all these upadhis, how much are we praying to Krishna that keep me detached? Because ultimately Krishna is the Paramatma in our heart who is going to give us detachment. Nobody else can give us detachment. None of our sadhanas can give us a detachment. We have been practicing for so long. By now we should have been completely detached. But at least we can make that endeavor of praying to Krishna that keep me detached. That is the only practical. What else can be practical? And continuously hearing about Krishna will make Krishna, that is the confirmation that Krishna wants that, yes, she is interested in me. Why? Because she is continuously hearing about me. That is the confirmation Krishna wants. That is why Krishna is saying Sarva Dharman Parityajya. Krishna already spoke about Sarva Adharman Parityajya in second chapter itself. But what is the end Krishna is making? He is not saying Sarva Adharman Parityajya. He is saying Sarva Dharman Parityajya. You have to give up your dharma as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter, as a sister. Everything.
Okay. Very beautiful, Prabhu. So my second question is, thank you again, Prabhu. And so my second question is, like you said, there are two things. One is holy name and the other is time. And it was said that time is not favorable, right? Now, as a devotee, I'm talking for myself, I often think, Rakhe Krishna, Mare Krishna, Rakhe Ke, or Abhishya Rakshi with Krishna. How do we draw parallel between the two? I mean, time is not more powerful than Krishna, right? So will Krishna not take care of the time if a devotee is in a trouble who is supposed to be, according to time, he is or she is supposed to be punished, but because he or she is a devotee, will Krishna not intervene? Did I make my question clear, Prabhu?
I'll paraphrase and repeat. Please correct me if I go wrong. Your question is... If according to the karma book, a devotee has to suffer, but he being a devotee, will not Krishna forgive him? Is this the question?
I was not thinking of karma, Prabhu, because we hear that, you know, we are supposed to get ocean-like karma results. I was thinking of time, Prabhu. You were saying about time. Time. I mean, are they the same? In the beginning, you said time is not favorable. So you're
right,
supposed
right.
to. Yeah. So with that, Krishna coming into picture, I was thinking.
So I'll give you two examples. This is from third canto, Jai Vijay. Okay. If you read the last section of this katha, then at the end, when Jai and Vijay are very morose. Jay and Vijay are very morose and they don't want to leave the Lord and his service because that's their life and soul. That's what they have been living all the while there for. And Krishna understands their mindset. Lord Vishnu understands their mindset. And they said, see, it's not a great deal for me to cut off this curse and keep you here. But these are the laws that I have made. And tomorrow the world should not say that Krishna changed the laws for his devotees. So this is what Lord Vishnu is speaking to Jaya. And Vijaya, I don't want to break my own laws. And that is the same thing happens when Mata Aditi goes. She says, I will not change the time. I know time is not favorable, but since you have come to me, and whoever comes to me, he never goes empty handed. So what I will do, I'll let the time to flow as it is, but then I will bring them to such a situation where they have to surrender to me. And through that surrender, your sons will get back all their wealth back. So Krishna will never interfere between the time, but for a devotee, surely he will make such arrangements that the laws that Krishna has made will also be followed. But at the same time, what the devotee desires, if it, that is favorable for himself and the society, Krishna will surely make that the devotee gets it. So these are the two examples. Does it make sense, Mata?
Absolutely, Prabhu. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I was just listening to, I would like to share this. I was just listening to His Holiness Radha Govind Maharaj. And
wow,
how,
yeah.
And he, it is on Brahma Bimohan Leela. And he was saying how Agasur got liberation. He got Sarupya Mukti. And he said, Krishna makes the rule and he breaks the rule. So it is up to him.
Yeah,
I was just contemplating it with you. Thank you so much, bro, for the wonderful.
Both concepts are correct, Mataji. You are also correct. Mine is also correct.
Yes, Prabhu. It has so many aspects. Thank you so much, bro. Koti koti dandavat. Please keep coming. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a beautiful answer. So I request any other devotees have any other questions for Prabhuji or realizations. You can please raise hand or you can just go ahead. Okay, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
If nobody have any other questions or realizations to Prabhuji, we can end the call here. Let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji. Vancha Kalpata Rupyasya Vasindhu Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupad Ki Jai, Jai Gopal Das Prabhuji Ki Jai.
Jai
once again for such a beautiful.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Namo Pranam.